Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode 191, being recorded on August 9th, 2017. On Skype with me, I have our colleagues Russell Young and Jamie Bryant. Sujit and Evan are off doing other things today, but we're happy to have Jamie here to kind of talk about a topic that's probably interest of our subscribers, the just-in-time access feature inside Azure. But before we get to that, we kind of do our normal thing of walk through some of the kind of latest updates in Azure and some of the new stuff that popped out there. So Russell, I know we have a list here. Anything standing out at you want to kind of jump on?
Yeah, there's a couple that I quite like the look of. So the first one, from a sort of a DevOps point of view, there's a new plugin for Jenkins, which allows you to deploy into our app services nice and easily. So you know, just extending that whole DevOps process. So if you're using Jenkins to doing your build and deployment, then there's a plugin there that just automates that piece, makes it nice and easy for you. Previously, the only sort of direct integrations that we had were through the VSTS native build tasks and release tasks, but this is the first one I think we've done for Jenkins. So that's quite nice.
And Jenkins is a workload we can actually even run on Azure as well, right? So we can, it's kind of out there too to just run the whole thing there inside Azure as well.
Yep, correct. Yeah. And the other one, which is kind of a little bit, it's not really DevOpsy, but I suppose it is a little bit. But it's about the App Insights output, so that data that you can query. There's a connector now within Microsoft Flow, so you can go and drag and drop a connector in there that goes and queries your Application Insights data using that time series kind of query language that's built in there. To go and visualize some of the data and produce an output that you can then put to the next step of your flow or logic app that will then email that to you or perhaps raise a VSTS work item about it. So you can get regular kind of updates in your email inbox directly straight out of that just by using some automation things. So I think that's quite nice. There's a blog post up in the Azure blog site that goes through all the steps and a couple of examples of how to do that. So I really like those two.
Cool. Yeah, there's a couple other ones that stood out at me. Since Evan's not here, I'll carry the banner for the SQL side, but there's a couple SQL things up here. One of the first ones was around troubleshooting if you're using the Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So we have this resource health check kind of system that's inside Azure that works with a lot of things inside Azure, but it's been kind of enhanced to basically help reduce troubleshooting time whenever you're using a SQL data warehouse. For instance, you know, if one of your nodes maybe goes offline or is being upgraded or something of that nature, maybe it's paused for some reason, you can actually use the resource health blade that's up there inside Azure. So it's integrated right into the portal and be able to get some of that resource information or telemetry type things back to understand like what's happening there. So a little tighter integration with the services we have in Azure to the warehouse.
So you get events like when it's upgrading and stuff like that, or scaling, or
that's right,
those kinds of things. Yeah, that's nice.
The other piece was SQL, and we had talked just recently about some of the CLI type tools that are being built and are out there now for SQL Server in Azure. There's also been the SQL Server tools. So if you're using the traditional kind of Management Studio type things that we have there, those tooling, they have extended support for the Azure AD authentication for the tools systems that we have there. They're called SQL DW tools and the Azure SQL database interface there. So when you're logging in, you basically have support right there to use, you know, multi-factor authentication, Azure AD, so full support for that to be able to do that a bit more elegantly when you're attaching to these. It just makes sense that those things would be extended to support Azure AD as a first-class kind of citizen.
Yeah, that's nice. And on authentication, there was one, I'm not sure if we mentioned it before, I don't think so. So it wasn't up on the blog post, it was in one of the AD sites in their own sort of private blog sections, and this was about Active Directory pass-through authentication. So this basically gives you, in effect, ADFS as a service, so you don't have to provision some VMs up there to get the pass-through authentication. So the passwords themselves don't need to be synced up to your AD, as long as you've got AD Connect running, it's able to talk back to your on-premises Active Directory to go and validate your authentication at the time. I think it's kind of making that whole ADFS bit a bit more PASY, but it doesn't quite go the full way yet. There's a couple of bits it can't do, and one of those is allowing multi-factor authentication properly. So you still need an ADFS server in the cloud for that.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be well received because, you know, setting up a ADFS infrastructure is not for the faint at heart. Not that it's super complex, but it's a lot to maintain. There's certificates and there's a lot of stuff to kind of make sure from a high availability standpoint work correctly, you know.
Well, that's it. I mean, so this service, obviously being an Azure service, is highly available. It's secure. It's easy to deploy, and it gives you a much better sort of user experience overall. And it saves you, you know, at least two VMs up there as well. So nice. It's all good.
Awesome. Yeah, the last one I had here was around Azure Stack. I think we'd mentioned a few shows ago at one of the conferences when we had kind of talked about Azure Stack and it kind of being released out there through our partners, obviously, through the hardware side. But there's a great blog post up here from one of the PMs on the Azure Stack team walking through kind of, you know, the differences about if you're starting to run one of these Azure Stacks, how's it different from Azure? Like, what kind of things? And we probably need to, I would suggest even to Sajid and the team, maybe we should pull Daniel in and kind of walk through this in more detail. But he's got a great blog post up here kind of walking through some of the differences and things to kind of pay attention to because Azure Stack is a slightly different kind of model. Obviously, trying to make it as close to what Azure looks like as possible. But, you know, when you're running it on-prem, obviously there's some differences there, and it's important to understand those.
Yeah, and it's hitting the streets fairly soon, isn't it? I think it's all the pricing's out there, and it's available to order and all sorts. So,
Yep. So we'll follow up with a future show on maybe a deep dive on the Stack stuff as well. But I think that's it for the kind of news this week. So I just wanted to give our guest a chance to kind of introduce himself. Maybe he can tell us a little bit about himself at Microsoft and then kind of dive into the topic at hand here around just-in-time access. So, Jamie, the floor is yours.
Hi, everyone. So, yeah, my name's Jamie Bryant. I'm a Global Cloud Solutions Architect here at Microsoft. So I've been here for about 10 months now. It's been an incredibly busy 10 months. I come from an infrastructure background, primarily working with sort of private cloud environments around Hyper-V, System Center, and things like that. So, really enjoying my role working with Azure, again, mainly around sort of the infrastructure as a service and migrating data center workloads into the crowd. So thanks for inviting me here today, guys. Here to talk to you about just-in-time access. So it's a feature that's in preview at the moment. You can use this today in preview, and I'm going to talk to you in a little bit more detail about it. So if you look at the sort of scenario why this sort of feature is being released, obviously you've got connections into your servers through remote desktop or SSH into Linux servers or ports that you need for management access for maybe your applications. Obviously that's an attack surface that brute force attacks and things like that could target. So this feature sort of reduces that attack surface by disabling access to those ports when they're not in use, but also give administrators the ability to open up those ports as and when they need them with a full audit history as well. So it's not just limited to your remote desktop and your sort of terminal SSH connections. You can specify the ports which take advantage of our network security groups rule sets. So if you're already using those today, there's no additional configuration required. If you're not using them, just-in-time access will set them up for you as well. So you can get going straight away with this fantastic piece of technology. It's reusing existing features within the portal. So role-based access control, it takes advantage of that. So if you've already got that set up for your users, again, you can get going straight away without any additional security configuration for your individual users. So the best bit about this is audit trail. So if you need to provide back an audit trail, if a server did get attacked and you need to do forensic analysis, you can identify who opened up those servers either to your internal networks or to the internet if they're accessible through there. It really is a sort of a very simple feature, but resolves a massive sort of attack vector for attackers trying to get into your network.
Yeah, this is interesting, Jamie. So, like, in the past, I work in the CSE group here now, so I work a lot more on product. But when I, in a past time at Microsoft, I worked with a lot of our enterprise customers, and one of the things some of the larger ones were asking for was, like, total lights-out environment. Like, they don't even want the admins to be able to go on and kind of be able to log into the machines, and potentially there could be a security breach or something as a result of that. And so they were asking, like, how can we kind of orchestrate that? It sounds like this is kind of targeted right squarely at that, to say, like, hey, we don't always have to have the RDP exposed to the internet on our Windows machines or SSH on our Linux machines. And this can kind of allow us to granularly be able to, on the fly, kind of grant access. Is that the use case, like, that you see this targeting?
Yeah, most definitely. And even go a little bit further than that. So if you've got customers or maybe FTP servers that you occasionally need to expose to the internet for customers or to upload files in from external networks, ideal use case around that. Same with sort of web-based management interfaces. If you've got a management interface for an application running on a certain port and it's publicly accessible or even internally accessible, and you only need it accessed once in a while, or you need an audit trail of who's accessing that even further, then that's an ideal use case as well. So you can be really, really granular on the ports that you specify in that rule set. So if you did want a machine that was totally disconnected, you could block all ports and then just open up when you need to. Obviously, that's quite a unique use case, but it does give you the ability to lock it down completely so there's no network access inbound to that machine. Until you need it. It's brilliant feature. And it can all be accessed through the security sensor, so it's not an additional control panel to go through. It's straight there in the Azure portal under the security sensor. And you can see which machines have already got it configured, which machines it recommends that you configure it against, or if there's ones that may be using the classic rather than the Azure Resource Management. So it is a Azure Resource Manager feature, so it's not available for classic VMs. So the majority of VMs these days are using our ARM technology, so you can get going straight away.
So no cost at all for this, then, is what I'm hearing, basically. It's a feature, as long as you're on the pricing tier that supports you having the Azure Security Center, which I believe is the standard pricing tier, not the free one, then you're good to go, right? There's no other additional cost?
There's no additional cost to it, yeah. So it's part of the standard pricing tier for Security Center. There's no additional cost or anything like that. On a per VM basis, it's straight there as a feature included within the standard tier.
That's awesome.
So from a sort of a user point of view, what's their experience when you start up your RDB client and go and talk to your VM? Do you have to request the access in advance, or is it the security center going to get in the way and intercept that and then prompt, or how does that work?
What it would do, so when you want to access a VM, you go into the Azure Security Center and go into the just-in-time access blade within there, and you select the server that you need access to. So you click on the request access. Obviously there might be a lot of ports in there that you've selected to block. So it'll give you, it'll ask you which ports you want to enable. It'll either ask you to specify your IP address of your machine, so you can be really, really granular, and it'll create a rule for the machine that you're connecting from. You could also give it a range, or you could set it so any IP address could connect into it. And then you set the time of how long you want access to that VM for. So you can actually, the administrators can set policies so that users can't leave it open for, say, a 24-hour period. You can be really granular on how long you can, as a maximum, you can set your sysadmins to be able to access that server for. Once you've selected those, you press open ports, and you've got access straight into the VM as you normally would.
Cool. And presumably there's either PowerShell or Azure CLI or REST API ways of requesting access as well, is there?
There is indeed. Yeah, you can access using the just-in-time access by PowerShell. So you can request access to a VM through PowerShell or even configure the policies through there as well. So if you've got a lot of VMs that you want to configure it against, you can just run the simple PowerShell command. It's all available on the docs.microsoft.com under the Azure Security Center, and underneath there's a just-in-time access tab, and it's got all the details in there for you as well. So the PowerShell command, it's easy. It's just invoke -ASC JIT access, and the commandlet has all the documentation for you within that.
Yeah, cool. And presumably there's a kind of a disconnect or a log off type one as well that revokes that, is there?
Yeah, there is. There is indeed. So, yeah,
rather than waiting for the 3 hours, you can just close it instantly when you're finished.
Yeah, you can do that. So bit of scripting if you wanted to give to your administrators. You can leave it the window sitting there, and once they finish, then they can just close down the connection straight away without leaving it open any longer than they need to.
And really these, nice. To be clear, this is not, I would call something like magic. This is behind the scenes. What's actually happening here is, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's basically modifying NSGs. Is that our network security groups? It's using our standard stuff in Azure, right? It's just kind of orchestrating this for us. Is that right?
Yeah, it's using all the standard technology we have on there today. It's just an interface to control the network security groups for you in a sort of a user-friendly way without a user having to have experience of defining network security groups, just that they need to access the server, here's how long I need to access it for, and here's the ports I need, again, with a full audit trail that can be exported for the security teams to look at.
Yeah, I think that's the important part, right? So it's like, This stuff, the technology or the ability to kind of do this has been there for a long time. You know, we've had NSGs for a while. You know, ARM's obviously been out there for a long time, and these kind of pieces. So somebody could have built this. The problem is, I think the value that this thing adds is really on like the automation side of actually orchestrating this, but also like the audit. I think that's huge. Like, so that the security guys could come in and at later point in time say who touched this in the last month or the last 6 months. Or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. The security bit and the audit trail is key, and that's what customers are asking for. That they need to be able to provide that audit history of who's doing what and when it's happening. So even from the GUI, when you go to request access to a server, it will tell you how many requests have been approved against it. It's just straight from the GUI, and also the last time that the just-in-time access was activated for that server and who it was activated by, so you can see straight away. So without having to dig through any reports like that, you can see the last logged on user as well.
Yeah, and I know Evan's not on here. He could have probably commented from the support side, but I know this is, I just know from talking with the product group that this is something that we kind of had in Azure for quite some time from a support perspective. So if someone would call Azure support like Evan and say, hey, you know, I need you to log into my VM and do this thing for me. That's just not, like, you can't just make a request like that because obviously we can't have people just randomly logging into to VMs. And so in that manner, if there was a case where someone needed to actually break glass and help a customer directly with a VM, there was a process inside that used it. But I think we were using a similar technology or the same technology to allow the very granular access for a specified period of time that's been signed off by the various parties in order to approve it.
Yeah, it's one of these things that makes you wonder why. You know, why it wasn't done sooner, but I guess it's like all these things, they're evolution, and just makes your life a lot easier, doesn't it, all these? Yeah.
And to be clear, this is a VM-centric type thing right now, right? So this isn't like for an app service or any of that stuff. It's specifically for virtual machines right now, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it's specifically for virtual machines at the moment. So, yeah, any VM that you've got created, you can assign these policies against as long as they're created within Azure Resource Manager, sort of rather than the sort of classic portal. But, yeah, that's all it needs to get up and running. And maybe future down the line, it'll open it up to other services. But obviously, this is in preview at the moment. So, obviously, sort of customer feedback sort of shapes the future of the products in Azure. So, yeah, see what comes out of this feature in the future.
And it's a little similar to how the Azure SQL DB firewall works at the moment. So if you want to go in and do something directly to the database from your own laptop, you kind of have to normally go in and add your laptop's IP address to that firewall anyway. Yeah, it would be nice if they added the same kind of automation whereby you could go to the security center in one place and do it, and it would revoke that rule when you're finished. Because at the moment, you have to remember to go through and tidy up when you're done if you've got dynamic IPs on your client all the time.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing too. Like I mentioned, the audit trail is really nice, but also the auto cleanup or the auto disable kind of feature. I know the enterprise guys really love that. The big customers where they really want to control access, and I think it's cool that it's beyond just like a login type thing. It's actually, as you mentioned, like FTP or some other protocols that may be running on the machine. You can actually just kind of control those as well. So I think that's super powerful for users to take a look at. Well, this is great. I don't know, Russell, if you have any other questions for Jamie or if Jamie, if there's anything else you want to share. I think it would be great if we could we can drop a couple links out in the show notes where customers or listeners can go and find out more information about how to kind of configure this, like step by step. I know we have that on the documentation site, so maybe we can get a couple links, or if there's any others you want to share as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess, Jamie, is this something you go, whenever you go to any of your customers, you're just advising them to use it by default if they've got any VMs up there? Is it kind of like a no-brainer that you just ask them to switch on and do?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, if the main thing that sort of customers look for is controlling that edge of their network. And it, I mean, even if someone accidentally sort of puts in sort of unsecure passwords, it removes that attack service to a certain extent. Obviously, always enforce a strong password policy, but for whatever reason, if there's an account on there, you're reducing that attack service that much more. Obviously, you're slightly opening it up again if someone has got a weak password when you do open up those ports, but it does help reduce that attack surface for those servers.
That's great.
Awesome. Well, I don't know, Russell, if you have anything else, any other questions? If not, I can say, Jamie, this has been very helpful for me, and I think our listeners will benefit from this, knowing that, you know, they have this option now in the Security Center to kind of help lock down their environment and reduce some of this brute force kind of attacks on their virtual machines in Azure.
Yeah, it's a lovely little feature. Yeah, thanks, Jamie.
Thanks for inviting me along.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, all.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.